Welcome to episode 17 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. My name is Randy Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. Fun series we just witnessed in the Bronx. The atmosphere was amazing. The crowds each day were really, really special. I feel like the series certainly lived up to the hype. Obviously, it was dampened a little bit with Juan Soto being out for each of the three games, but the crowds were electric. Dodgers fans really showed up. There were a ton of Dodger fans. That was probably, in my 2 years on the beat now, that was probably the most fans from an opposing team that I saw in the building. So shout out to Dodgers fans for showing up in full force.
I will not shout out Dodgers fans for showing up just because they travel well. San Francisco Giants fans travel well also. I know I'm not referring to opening day of last year, but the last time they were in New York, Giants fans like really traveled well. They're an interesting fan base as Dodgers fans know very well. The Dodgers fans showed out. I thought the series was good. I think I was more into the overreactions of the series than the actual series itself. I thought the reactions and treatment and context placed on the series was totally overblown. We had mentioned it on the live stream, I think, that it was going to be a fun series, but it wasn't a super important series. And I get like the legacy franchises and they came to the Bronx and all that. But I just felt the way people just reacted to the series was just over the top. And for whatever reason, it irked me. It just felt like irrational to me. And for me, the series was close throughout. And the Yankees threw Cody Poteet and Nestor Cortez, who are not two of the Yankees' best starters. The Dodgers threw Yamamoto and Glasnow, two of their best starters, if not the two best starters on their staff right now. And the series was, all three games were like very close. You know, I think it was the Teoscar Hernandez and Aaron Judge show. And I think it just came down to that. Two very good players having exceptional series and little moments here and there. But people were treating, and especially Yankees fans were treating the two losses as a referendum on the season and the team. And it just irked me because it just felt like there was way too much weight on the series. And for me, I think it took away from the series and the fun of the series just because of how it just felt like we were inundated with either negativity or these just over the top reactions that just did not fit what the games were showing us. You know, the first game was zip zip going into the 11th. That's a great baseball game and is not a referendum on either team other than they're both great teams. You know, like, I don't know. It was just when we had the live stream, I was super excited about it, about the series. And today I'm just like, I'm happy it's over. I mean, I'm happy we can move on. I think the Dodgers are a really good team. That was expected. The Yankees are a really good team. That was expected and known if you follow the team. And that was it. I'm happy they're going to Kansas City now, to be quite honest.
I'm happy it's over just because we can get back to the normal amount of media being around. Like when there's so much media around, like the players hide because they don't want to be swarmed by 50 plus reporters. Like as an example, let's say the Yankees are playing the Royals, but it's in the Bronx. there may be, you'll have the usual beat guys around, and then maybe some TV, but not that much. Whereas with the Dodgers, especially that Friday night game, for whatever reason, there was like at least 60 people in the Yankee clubhouse, which meant that the Yankees were not going to be in there for interviews, which is our time to, you know, talk with them about whatever. Obviously, like, they just weren't going to be in there. So that's definitely something I am happy about, that it is over with now. But yeah, I mean, it was a fun series. That Friday night game was electric. You know, like you said, 0-0 going into the 11th. It just felt like there was a high drama in that game. Anytime there's high drama in a game, it's, you know, it's exciting. And even Saturday's game was fun up until, you know, the bullpen collapsed. And then even last night's game, I thought was really entertaining. It was three very entertaining games. They don't mean, like we said in on Friday, it's three games against a National League team. So it's not really, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that important. It's not the Yankees lost two of three. That means that they're not the best team in the sport. They can't win the title. They can't beat the Dodgers. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Like you mentioned, they started Cody Poteet in one of the games and Nestor Cortez in another game. Nestor's been the Yankees' worst starter this season. I don't know where he would fall on the pecking order if, like, you know, if this was the World Series. Like, is Nestor starting game two? No.
Right.
I don't even know if he's starting any of the games, truthfully. So, again, it was fun. It doesn't mean anything. I know I saw a lot of people saying the three series that the Yankees have lost this year, two of them, the Dodgers and the Orioles, are teams that are World Series contenders, and those are the two series that the Yankees have lost, the other being the Blue Jays, which was early in the season. Again, I don't really take much from that. It's three games, and they were without one of their best players in Juan Soto, and they've been without one of their other best players, Gerrit Cole, who's yet to throw a pitch this season.
And also, context matters, because all these games were close. I mean, the three losses in Baltimore, I guess the Rodon one kind of got out of hand. He didn't have a great game. The other two that they lost, they were close games. I mean, they really came down to moments where the Orioles defense made a spectacular play, saved some runs, and they were able to hold on. The Dodgers series, same thing, was close. I mean, it was zip-zip in the 11th. I thought that was the best game of the series, especially because it was the first game. Cody Poteet pitched really well. I thought both sides pitched well. Yamamoto was incredible and showed why he's had the Dodgers and the Yankees interested in him, and really, in my mind, justified the investment that the Dodgers have made in him. He was fantastic. I know the velocity jumped up and the command was even more impressive. But it was zip-zip in the 11th, and Teoscar Hernandez just drove one into the gap, and the Yankees just couldn't cash in the 11th. The second game, it was 4-2 in the 8th, and then they win the third game. So, I mean, yeah, they lost the series, but it wasn't like they got hammered or they were outclassed or didn't belong on the field with these other two teams. I mean, all the games were close. There might be two or three games, and I don't think that that's underplaying it, where you've watched a Yankees game in 2024 and I'm like, ah, they just, this game's over, you know, or like this was a bad game across the board. I feel like they've been in 95% or more of every game that they've played this season. I don't know what other indicator you need to demonstrate how good they are. And also to remind people, after the win last night, they're either tied or lead the league in most wins against teams above 500. So again, like that was just my problem overall. Like I don't want to like complain too much. Like I don't want to come across as like ornery or like being all like negative, but it just felt like, especially for this series, because it was overhyped, the reactions just way out of line. You know what I mean? Like the whole, this is back to 2023 without Soto. And it's like, that's not true. Like that's not the case. If you can tell me or show me where Billy McKinney and Willie Calhoun and Jake Bowers and Kyle Higashioka were in any of these lineups over the last 3 days, then sure, yes, it's like 2023. But it wasn't. It's not. It's not the same team. This team is very good. It has some issues and has some holes that we'll get into later, and the holes that we're all familiar with and we've talked about for a while. This is not 2023 plus Soto. Like, let's please put that to bed. Like, that was the one thing that, like, really bothered me. That, okay, they didn't get some hits with runners in scoring position. It happens. It's going to happen again. It's going to happen with Soto in the lineup. There's going to be times when Soto has a situation and he's not going to get a hit. It happens. It's baseball. Like, we don't need to be extreme with everything and put a referendum on every single moment over the course of a season. It was a great series. It was two great teams. They might see each other again in the World Series. We'll see what happens, but it was fun. And I think that's all that really mattered, ultimately.
This is the start of the end for the Yankees. They're going to lose 3 of 4 to the Royals.
Yep.
They're going to Boston this weekend. They're going to get swept by the Red Sox, and it's all downhill from here.
It's over because they
the season's over.
I will say,
it was fun while it lasted. You know, it was a fun 67 games.
Yes, it was good. It was good. All right, let's get into the games a little bit. I mentioned this. Teoscar Hernandez was incredible. I mean, I know he's a good player. I know he's a good hitter. Obviously, we know him from Toronto and then Seattle, but really with Toronto. And he's a good hitter. But I feel like on this team, because of just how it's constructed, he's like way better. I mean, that was super impressive. I'm curious, like, who was more impressive to you? Just like in an individual performance, was it Hernandez or Judge? I think I'm leaning Hernandez. Like he won two of the games. Like, I thought Betts and Ohtani were fine. They were okay. You know, they were good. They were impactful. Freeman was there. Hernandez won the first two games, in my opinion. I mean, he was incredible.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I'm looking now. He had 9 RBIs in the series. He was six for 12 in the series, 3 home runs, added a stolen base for giggles. I mean, he was incredible. And what's funny about Hernandez is, like, any team basically could have had him if they would have offered a multi-year deal. Like, he got a 1-year deal from the Dodgers. And I know, going back to his free agency, like, he was looking for a 3-year deal. And it was weird, too. I didn't feel like he was getting any buzz in free agency. Like, it didn't seem like many teams were interested in him. And he's been one of the better power hitters in the sport. Like, this isn't new. Like, he's been a good hitter. For whatever reason, though, no teams were interested in him. Maybe because, you know, he's not a great fielder. He doesn't run well. But again, like, you would want that bat in your order. Like, he's a professional hitter. He's really good. So yeah, I would say out of the two, who was more impressive? I mean, Hernandez won them games. Judge didn't. Judge helped win them one game.
Right.
So in that regard, you know, I would take the wins every time. But again, you know, what Judge did this weekend was just, he continues to be incredible. I mean, he is the best hitter in the universe. Last night's home run was silly. I mean, Hernandez, I thought was a statue out there. Like, he did not move. Like, the ball sailed over. I don't think Hernandez budged. Like, he stayed completely still.
Yeah.
Now Judge has 24 home runs. He's on pace for 59 home runs, which is unbelievable. I can't believe he's doing this again. I just feel like Judge is at the point where you should expect him to hit at least 50 home runs every time he plays a season and stays healthy. Like, he's that incredible. It is wild. But going back to the Dodgers for a second, I was surprised with how well their bottom of the order played, like, same, in all three games.
Same.
It felt like the Yankees struggled to get the 7, 8, 9 hitters out in every game. Like, Kike Hernandez was on base, it felt like, every single time in the first two games, at least. Even Chris Taylor, who's hitting under 100, was on base a couple times. They did work, and then, you know, top of the order and the middle of the order did their damage for the Dodgers. That's what helped them win games this weekend.
Yeah, I think that was my most frustrating takeaway on the Yankee side, was that they just didn't take advantage of the Dodgers' bottom of the lineup. And we did the live stream and, you know, had that little back and forth about whose bottom of the lineup is better, I guess, comparatively speaking. And performance-wise this weekend, it was clearly the Dodgers' bottom of the lineup, which I thought was disappointing. I mean, every time those guys came out to the plate, I was like, this is an out, or should be an out, and then it wasn't. And I will still remain steadfast in this. The Dodgers are limited by the bottom of their lineup. And I think over the course of the season, I think that's kind of, it's proven itself so far that the bottom of their lineup, like, is a real issue, which made the series more frustrating to watch unfold, especially in the two losses, just because, like you said, they were really impactful. Kike Hernandez had a really good series. I thought Pajes was pretty good. I know he dropped that ball in center field, but just offensively speaking, he had a couple hits. I thought Jason Hayward was bad offensively. Rojas, I know he's hitting like 280, but I mean, whatever. So that was frustrating to watch in such close games, to have those at bats and those spots in the lineup, like, be so impactful. As a Yankees fan, that was frustrating to watch. And I'm not really sure what went into it. If maybe some of the pitchers were like, okay, I have a break here, you know, and I think that's human nature, that we have such an incredible top of the lineup with the Dodgers that, you know, these players know it too. They know the difference between, like, Betts and Chris Taylor. So, you know, I think it's natural to say, okay, I might be able to navigate this part of the lineup without as much precision, or I don't want to say concentration, because I think that they're all focused and locked in, but, you know, you might maybe take your foot off the gas and it might not bury a pitch the way you would against, like, Freddie Freeman, let's say. So, I don't know. It felt like the bottom of the order had for the Dodgers, played a bigger role than it should have. And as we know, watching the series, the outside of Oswaldo, and I think Oswaldo was really the only one in the bottom of the lineup over the weekend that, like, really had an impactful, productive at bat. I can't really think of anybody else that really did anything at the bottom of the Yankees lineup. I mean, we can get into Grisham's home run, but he was batting fifth, so he wasn't at the bottom of the lineup. So, yeah, I mean, the Dodgers definitely won that aspect of the battle, and it's something that we had talked about on Friday. And funny enough, the one that's been scrutinized more is the one that came through.
So I was curious. I looked this up on I looked this up on Saturday. And I don't know if it is concerning or if it means anything, but I was just curious to see like what the Yankees' production is offensively without Soto and Judge in the order. And because Soto and Judge have hit 2 and 3, it's very easy to see the other guys' production combined. So up until Friday, which is the day Soto was out of the order, so the Yankees won, number one hitter, and then 4 through 9 have a combined 98 WRC plus this season. And some notable teams who are better than them in those other spots are the Orioles, the Dodgers, the Brewers, Houston, Philly, Seattle, Cleveland, Atlanta. The Yankees are 14th overall. I don't know if that means anything. I don't know if it, you know, is it common sense that it come the playoffs, teams are going to try to pitch around Judge and Soto and make Stanton, Rizzo, LeMahieu, Torres beat them. I certainly thought it was interesting because I was under the impression that the other guys have been better because like they have, I think still like 7 or 8 guys who are over a 100 WRC plus, but then that stat says, you know, combined they're a little below average WRC plus wise, 98. I thought it was interesting. I don't know if it means anything. It is common sense that, you know, for the Yankees to win the title this year, Judge and Soto are going to have to produce and they're going to have to be the two best hitters in the lineup. But, you know, if teams try and pitch around them, do the Yankees have enough offensively to win? I don't know. I think it's interesting.
No, it's definitely interesting. I think it brings up a good conversation because I think, well, I would take Volpe out of it because Volpe's really good. So for me,
but can Volpe win you a series like by himself? Whereas like Judge and Soto, I think could carry a team by themselves. I don't know if Volpe can.
Yeah, but that's not really what I'm saying though. I mean, maybe he can. I mean, I felt like when he was red hot at the beginning of the year, he was like the main guy with Soto. I mean, I feel like really early on when he had a little bit more power, and was hitting some home runs, I felt like it was him and Soto were the two guys carrying the team. So I think he's capable of it. Do I think he can pull a Teoscar Hernandez and get 9 RBIs in a series? Probably not. But like, I think Volpe can be impactful where he's one of the 2 or 3 guys that are driving the team offensively. I think he's capable of doing that. But I was going to say more like on the aggregate, I think that like if you combine 4 through 9, I think somebody like Anthony Rizzo is bringing everybody else down. Like that's how bad he's been.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that stat says that for the Yankees to be their absolute best, they need someone in that 4 to 9 range to step up.
Right.
I mean, we've seen Stanton's like on a roller coaster this year. Like you don't know going into a series, is Stanton going to be good or is he going to be completely absent like he was against the Dodgers? You have no idea.
I feel like that. I mean, that's who he is now. I think he's been like,
yeah, 100%. But like ideally you want him to be at the top of the roller coaster in the playoffs. Yeah. I just don't know if you can expect that. Like he's such a hard player to evaluate this year just because of the fact like it is basically if he's not hitting a home run, he's kind of worthless because he's not getting on base at all. So right. he is very hard to evaluate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just with Stanton, I accept the roller coaster and lean on history here where he's oftentimes one of their best hitters in the postseason. I mean, he's done it multiple times. So
he is the best hitter. He's better yeah. than Judge in the postseason.
Right. So with I put Stanton in his own category because he's kind of evolved, devolved, however you look at it, whatever your perspective is, into this like very streaky old school slugger. Like he's just the guy that's going to mash. That's why he's on a team, and you got to take the good with the bad, and it is what it is with Stanton. I think it means two things. Gleyber has to step up and play better, and we know defensively he has to play better. The like lack of focus stuff, like it, I don't know why this keeps popping up. That maybe that's just who he is, but that's one thing. But offensively, I know he's been better, but he can obviously do more. So I think a lot of this is Gleyber. I think Rizzo's we're reaching the end of the line here with Rizzo, not just like performance wise, but and you would know this better than me because you're around the team. They're bringing somebody in. Whoever that is, they're going to try their best to at least add an option to the corner infield spots. We can talk about this after the break, but the Rizzo spot needs to be addressed. I don't see him turning it around to the point where, you know, he can get so hot that it kind of turns around his season. He might be able to like contribute a little bit, but there's so many metrics and at bats that you can turn to now where it's like we don't know where he's at. You know what I mean? Like, so to me, that spot is screaming for an upgrade in some form or fashion. So to me, it's really Gleyber and I guess whatever you can get out of LeMahieu, you know, to address those spots where you can trust someone. The other thing too is when Soto's back, you put Verdugo in one of those spots as well. And Verdugo mm-hmm. has been productive. So I think Verdugo takes care of one of those spots. And Gleyber and LeMahieu, just going off the people that are on the roster now, have to contribute. I'm not expecting anything from Anthony Rizzo moving forward. If he gives something, great. But I think the team is like basically saying the same thing by not playing him. You know, they didn't play him yesterday. They're probably not going to play him today. And it feels like a benching. It doesn't feel like a go fix this thing like Curtis Granderson back in the day, or I don't know. I can't think of another example. This feels like you're not playing well. We have to do something here.
Yes. I thought it was interesting. It was, yesterday. So Sunday, first question that Boone was asked in the pregame press conference was like, why was Rizzo out of the order? And then he said, I can read the quote. I just felt like it was time. It's probably been on my mind a little bit. I know the question was asked the other day and it was on my mind a little bit. Then I felt like today was the day and we'll see where we go from here. That was the part of the question, I mean, part of the answer where I was like, huh? What mm-hmm. do you mean we'll go from here? What mm-hmm. does that mean? Because it's, you know, usually like the Yankees would give a guy a day off and he's in the lineup the next day, but we'll go from here. I thought that was very telling. And then, you know, we asked and, you know, he said he might get today off too. The Yankees don't give guys back-to-back days off for no reason. Usually, especially one who's not hurt. Like the Yankees have been very clear that Rizzo is fully healthy. They kept on talking about his winter, his spring, how great it was. So like this is a clear benching. I do wonder if this is part of their, I don't know, strategy is the right word, but a precursor of what he might have to expect in the coming weeks by the trade deadline, because this can't continue. He's playing a position where you have to hit. Defense is not that important at first base. It's just not. You have to hit if you're a corner infielder, and he's not hitting. He's been one of the worst hitters, not only as a first baseman, but in the sport. You know, since last year, it's been a full calendar year now, and I get that he was dealing with a concussion last year, but, you know, you have to include those at-bats. He took those at-bats, and he has the third worst OPS over this time span, going back to last June 1st. The only two players in the sport who are worse than him are Tim Anderson and Javi Baez, who are constantly, like, made fun of because of how bad they are offensively. And Rizzo hasn't really gotten that heat yet. And I feel like, you know, he's been so bad over this past year where I feel like there needs to be more heat on how Rizzo has performed. He's been really bad. You can't go into the postseason with him as your first baseman. If he's going to perform like this, it's an automatic out the way he's performing. So we'll talk about it after the break, but, you know, the Yankees have to do something here.
So this conversation with Rizzo leads us to a bigger picture question and conversation that we'll get into right after this break. And we're back. Let's pick up the conversation on Anthony Rizzo. And as you mentioned before the break, he is at this point one of the worst everyday hitters in baseball. And I think it's so bad now that a team that does give its vets a lot of leash have decided that we're going to rein this leash in. I mean, a lot of times, I know you gave the quote, and the quote is revealing, but a lot of times teams will tell you what they think without having to tell you. And Boone added to that. He added in a layer with his quote to you guys. But the benching itself tells you all you need to know, because I think the history of this team under Cashman and in the Boone years, they play through it. They give guys opportunities. Like, if you have a track record and you have an impressive back of the baseball card, they're going to give you an opportunity to navigate through it. There have been a lot of guys that have had slumps that have not played well. But something is going on here that they see that is, at this point, alarming to them. And we have the public metrics, and we mentioned this during the break. There isn't one metric that you can turn to with Anthony Rizzo right now and say, okay, well, at least we have that to kind of hold on to, and, you know, that gives us a glimmer of hope. There isn't one. It's bad across the board. The numbers are bad. The metrics are bad. There's nothing there. There has to be something else that the Yankees are seeing with their own metrics or their own evaluations that's telling them he's hurting the offense. Like, that's basically what they're saying, is that even with as good of a team that we have, there's a problem here, and we can't let this problem continue to fester day in and day out. And that's not a good sign when a team that has a history of supporting vets and, like, kind of guiding them through it. Even with, like, Joey Gallo, we all knew that it wasn't working with Joey Gallo, but they tried to figure out ways to get him in there. And then eventually he started losing playing time. Then eventually he wasn't here anymore, but they did try to get Joey Gallo going. He probably played more than he deserved or earned based off his performance. In, I guess it was 2022. So I don't know. I don't think that this is a good sign for Anthony Rizzo that on June 9th, which was yesterday, today's June 10th, he probably won't play today, that the Yankees have made this decision. And it's in a year where they're arguably the best team in baseball, and they still made this decision. Like, you know, I think it's not good for Anthony Rizzo, but if you're looking at it from a big picture view, I think it's a good sign that the Yankees are saying, look, this is the year. Like, we're going for it. And if you're not playing at this level and you cannot contribute where we need you to contribute so we can win a World Series this year, we're going to make moves. We're going to make decisions. We're going to impact your playing time. So I think in the big picture view, this might be viewed as a positive.
I agree with you. I think your point about his metrics is a good one to make, because usually, you know, if a player is struggling, as we did in April when we were talking about Aaron Judge, like, his metrics were still good. He just wasn't getting the results. And I'll pat ourselves on the back. Like, we were like, there's nothing to be concerned about Judge. Like, his metrics are still fine. It is just going to be a matter of time before the results start coming. And obviously, they ended up being what they have been so far. He's been the best hitter in the universe. With Rizzo, there isn't anything to point to as to say, oh yeah, like, he is just like a few games away from breaking out here. Because, like, there's nothing to point to. There's no concrete data to point to say this guy is on the verge of breaking out. You know, if you just look at his Statcast page, it's as blue as the water in Turks and Caicos.
That's which is very blue.
That's how blue it is.
Yeah.
So I don't know with Rizzo. He plays a position where you have to hit. The defense is not that important at first base. It's just one of those spots on the field where you can get away with having a below average first baseman defensively, as long as they hit, and he just hasn't hit. So I think that's also one of the things that the Yankees have to think about, especially when we're talking about the trade deadline. As I wrote with Ken Rosenthal today, looking at the trade deadline, the Yankees should be strongly aggressive at the trade deadline because they have a really good opportunity of winning the World Series. This is probably their best chance to win the title since 2009. And because of that reason, they should be looking to improve, even if marginally is the outcome here. You know, they're 25 games over 500. Some fans may be like, well, why are you trading guys? We're this good. Leave Rizzo in the lineup. He's fine. But, like, the Yankees should be trying to improve if they can. That's why we've been talking about they should look to improve the bullpen. Yes, the bullpen has the second best ERA in the sport. Okay, that's good and all, but, like, you can watch the games and be like, okay, like, they only have two trusted relievers right now. You need more than that in October. Because if one of those guys falls apart, then what?
Right.
So that's why they should be looking to try and making this team as best as they possibly can. Like, they're obviously really good. Like, no one is denying that. No one's denying the record. No one's denying the stats. We all can see that. But if they can improve the roster in any way possible, they certainly should. And first base is a clear, not just first base, corner infield is the two spots where the Yankees should be looking to improve. I don't know what LeMahieu's going to offer. I have not been impressed with DJ so far since he's been back. Even last year, I wasn't the biggest fan of what DJ did. I know he was fine in the second half, but he just doesn't look like the DJ we saw, you know, 2020, 19, 18, 17. Like, he's just not that hitter anymore. So if you can get a better player, either first base or third base, they should do that. And I know a lot of fans have been saying, well, what are you going to do about the clubhouse? Like, the clubhouse is going to be upset, or, you know, Judge specifically, he's obviously tight with Rizzo. He's going to be upset. He's not going to approve of this. So what? I mean, we're talking about 30-year-old guys and their feelings about a player like getting traded, like, give me a damn break. I mean, come on. These guys are making millions of dollars. It's a business. Everybody knows, everybody in that clubhouse knows it's a business. If the Yankees aren't going to win the World Series because Anthony Rizzo gets benched or Anthony Rizzo gets traded, then there are deeper problems inside that clubhouse that we don't even know about, because that should not be a reason why the Yankees don't win the play, don't win the World Series, is because Rizzo got benched. Like, give me a break. It's not like that, that stuff to me, like, yes, it's important, but it's so overblown that, oh, like, we're losing a veteran leader. Like, they have plenty of veteran leaders in that clubhouse. They don't need Rizzo's leadership to win a championship. So if that's the reason why you want to hold on to him, it shouldn't be the reason.
I don't think Anthony Rizzo would have a problem with it. I think Anthony Rizzo is a world champion. I think he's a high character guy, or he comes across that way. I think if that's what happened, that I don't think Anthony Rizzo is going to start causing a problem in the locker room. I think he would be supportive. I think that he would still continue to be a veteran leader. He gets it, you know, and he understands, and he knows. I mean, he knows better than anybody. He's struggling. So,
and he knows that, just like right, talking with him, he knows that he's not performing. He knows that he's not doing what he should be to help this team win. Like, he is very aware of that. Like, he is open and honest about he is not playing well, and he hasn't played well in the past year. Like, he knows this. So he's not, it's not like he's going to just throw a fit because he's benched. Like, he knows he isn't performing.
Right. And I want Anthony Rizzo to perform well. I mean, I'm an Anthony Rizzo fan. I'm happy that they have him or acquired him. I'm happy that they gave him an extension to be here. I think the injury had, like, really sucks and obviously torpedoed his year last year. He was off to a great start last year, and he hasn't been able to rebound ever since. I don't know if that contributes to what's happening now. I don't know what the reasons are totally, but I would like to see Anthony Rizzo succeed as with the Yankees. And I think if he was hitting, that's one less thing that they have to worry about, and they would be even more better off than they are right now. But that's not the case. And I mean, we mentioned this before. Brian Cashman has a long history of not giving a you know what if he has an opportunity to improve the team. And because the team is so good, he's absolutely going to look to upgrade spots on the roster. And if you're one of the players that's unfortunately letting him know that I need to improve this spot, that's the spot he's going to look at. Now, whether he can get somebody, will he get somebody? No idea. I couldn't tell you. Like, obviously, I'm not in those discussions. I don't know what the cost will be. I don't. If you know me on Twitter, you know I don't play that trade package game, because it's just, there's so many variables that we're just unaware of. So I'm not sitting here today saying they're absolutely getting X player to fill X spot, but they are absolutely looking at those spots that we're mentioning. And we can go back to the Dodgers series. We talked about the bottom of the Dodgers lineup and the fact that the bottom of the Yankees lineup, even without Soto and having to shuffle people around, it can be better. And the point is to be as deep and as lethal and as imposing a team in October as you can possibly be. And the regular season, fortunately, because they're playing so well, gives you that cushion to really evaluate and say, okay, in a couple months, if we face X team or we have this matchup, how can we augment our roster to, like, insulate ourselves from our weaknesses, but also be the aggressor and really maximize the matchups that we might have against XYZ teams, whether it's Baltimore or Seattle or Cleveland or whoever. You know, now's the time that I think that they're looking at their roster and saying, okay, what are the extra pieces we need now so that when we get to October, we make your life a living hell facing us. Every game, we could throw out X pitcher, and he's going to do his thing. But every time, every inning your pitcher goes up against our lineup, he has to deal with somebody that's going to make it really difficult for them to get through 4 or 5 innings in October. That's what this is about now. And we've been saying it for over a month now. It's corner infield. Even if you get one more corner infielder, that could make a huge difference. You know what I mean? Like, you really just need 2 would be great. I don't think that that's happening. Unless it's like a bigger name and then a lesser name that, you know, like a John Birdie type. So I'm just throwing out like kind of a comp. But I think you need like a bigger, more established player either at first or third. So you know that like there's a higher chance of you having a player that can perform better than a Rizzo or LeMahieu. And then you're just adding depth, you know, if you wanted to add 2. But to me, I think they just need 1. You just need to figure out who that player is. It could be third or first, because I don't think Rizzo or LeMahieu is going to play well enough to make a strong enough case that you can't bring somebody in to either take their spot or cut into their time. I think expecting that would be a mistake. And to me, I think the way we're describing it is correct in that it's just corner infield. Get a corner infielder who can be better than these two guys. And then you have enough depth where you can put somebody in the other spot, regardless of what it is. So that's the way I'm looking at it moving forward.
Yeah, I think it's just corner infield. I know some people are sick of Glaber and how, you know, he loses focus throughout games. I think the Yankees are just going to have to, you know, if a ball's hit his way in October, you have to just hope and pray. Like, I don't think they're moving on from Glaber. Not in season. Obviously, after the season, I do not think he is coming back. I have been adamant about that from the beginning. I think this is the last year that Glaber will be a Yankee.
Yep.
But for this season, I don't see him getting replaced. I don't think they'll make a move there. I would be surprised about that, actually. So, you know, when we're talking about the playoffs again, if the ball's hit his way, you just don't know what's going to happen. And that's concerning. I totally get the concerns. Like, behind the scenes, like, they're definitely talking about that. They're definitely talking about how you just don't know. You don't know with Glaber. You don't know what you're getting on a daily basis. He has the ability to make some really special plays. He made a couple in this Dodgers series, honestly, where he has shown that he can make really nice plays. And then the plays that he should make, those are the ones that he screws up. He's a very, very frustrating player to watch, because, like, you know, the talent is in there. It's just, he has a hard time, you know, making sure that he's like an even keel player throughout. Like, if Glaber was like, Glaber's had like a 115 WRC plus in the past like month, like he's been turning the corner offensively. If that was the case, like if you had a 115 player, that's fine. But you also have to factor in that he has 10 errors, and like you just don't know what you're getting defensively. Like, it brings down like his value. But there's nothing they can. I don't think there's anything they're going to do with that. It's corner infield. It's corner infield and it's bullpen, where are the two areas on the roster where, as of June 10th, I would expect them to make some sort of move or moves to improve those spots.
Yeah, I don't. Glaber isn't going anywhere. It is what it is. I don't even know who they would get. And, I mean, yeah, they have some internal options, but they're not, like, sustainable options going into the playoffs. I mean, yeah, you're right. They're just going to have to hold their breath and see what happens.
You mentioned the internal options. I guess it's right to talk about the internal options for corner infield. I've seen people clamoring for Ben Rice. You know, Rice just got promoted to AAA. I think he's hit 3 home runs now since getting promoted to AAA. If I'm Brian Cashman, I am not going into October hoping Ben Rice performs on the major league level. Like if you correct. Can, if you can upgrade first or third with a major leaguer, a current major leaguer who's already established, that is what the, you want to talk about Ben Rice being your first baseman in 25. That's fine. But he should not be who the Yankees going into October with. He may hit 20 home runs in AAA. That's fine. If you want to have him on the bench as an option, that's cool. But having him be the first baseman, one, he hasn't played there much, but two, you don't know what you're getting. Like the Yankees' plan, because they're a really good team, should be, I want an established player who I know is going to perform. Ben Rice is an unknown. He may perform. He may be Shane Spencer. He may go on a crazy run if the Yankees call him up. But you can't count on that. So, like, they should be looking at external upgrades for October.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I haven't really talked about Ben Rice. I know he's doing well. But you're right. This is all, at this point, everything is in the context of October. I mean, I know in the day-to-day of the regular season, people are so focused on that. I'm focused on that. You're focused on that. That's how this goes. You know, they're playing the games now. You look at the ones that are in front of you. But they're going to the playoffs. So the GM's job, the organization's job, is to kind of forecast and prepare themselves to be as formidable as possible when it matters the most. And I agree with you. And it's not a knock on Ben Rice at all, but you're trying to win a World Series. And at this point, you can't just say, well, we're going to roll the dice with Ben Rice to help lead us to a World Championship. I think Jason's different. Excuse me. Now I'm having allergies talking about Ben Rice. I think Dominguez is a little different because he's a more dynamic player. And of course, we'll get into Jason later, as always. But yeah, I think with corner infield specifically, and like who the names are involved with Rizzo and LeMahieu, you need a major leaguer to, if somebody's going to cut into their time or take a spot, it has to be a major leaguer. Unless you can't get that guy. Because I mentioned before, like on a previous episode, I don't really know who the targets are outside of the very obvious ones. We mentioned McMahon, Goldschmidt, Ke'Bryan Hayes. There might be one or two other people on the corner infield market that might be available. We don't even know if those guys are going to be available.
Yeah, I mean, like that's the thing with trades. It's very hard. Sometimes you don't know who's available until they get moved. That's right. Just how trades work. Right. Trades don't, you know, you can speculate about trades. You can talk about possible targets, but we don't know about trades until they happen. You know, Josh Bell, I think, is someone who is, you know, Ken and I mentioned Josh in our story today. He's 100% getting moved. Would you want Josh Bell to take over for Rizzo? I don't know. Like, is that a big enough upgrade? I don't know. I think he's a fine hitter, but you know, I don't know if that would be the move.
Yeah. I mean, that wouldn't do much for me.
No,
I mean,
it doesn't move the needle. Like you want to move that moves the needle. And I don't know if that one does.
Yeah. So, I mean, even going down the list, and I guess part of it too is you, like you said, we don't know who's actually available. So but if you're just like playing the guessing game, there aren't that many options in the corner infield market that immediately like jump out outside of the guys that we've mentioned. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I definitely think they're looking at that now, and they're probably having meetings and starting to figure out like who the targets are and initial conversations. But I mean, it's going to be a little while. I think I don't think this is going to be a situation where they bring somebody in right away. It feels like it's too early. So they're going to have to like navigate their way through it. And again, 25 games above 500, arguably the best team in baseball. You know, we're just focusing on things that I wouldn't say that they're at the margins, but, you know, there are a lot of things going well for the Yankees. It's just, you know, how do they position themselves to be in even better position in October? So with that, we'll go to our last break, come back with the mailbag, and then wrap it up. So this is the Views from 314 Feet podcast. We'll be back right after this break. And we're back. It's mailbag time. We have a bunch of questions. Thank you to everybody who sent in questions. We'll try to get through as many as possible before we get out of here. First one is from Jenny Fry. Hey, guys, love the pod. Thank you very much, Jenny. Here's my question. Why are Yankees fans clamoring for Dominguez to be brought up? Multiple question marks. Don't get me wrong. I'm a fan of Jason, and I think in the future he will have a huge role in this team. I just don't understand why fans want him to be called up so badly just to sit on the bench. He's only had 8 games at the MLB level, and Grisham is a 2-time Gold Glove winning outfielder. I also don't understand the Grisham hate. He's adjusting from being an everyday player to a bench player. Anyone will struggle with that. And to top it all off, he's had 2 or 3 very clutch home runs for us. The Yankees are a very good team, and we don't need to rush Dominguez back or trade DFA Grisham to get better. Bullpen and corner infield is where we need help. That's my rant from a rational Yankees fan in Texas. Okay. So.
You wrote that question.
I definitely wrote that question and just asked Jenny to send it to us.
Yeah, you wrote that.
Yeah, especially the Trent Grisham part, which I just want to say real quick. I've been saving this. I am very happy. Well, first of all, I thought the We Want Soto chance was embarrassing as hell. Like, I get the spirit behind it, but that's embarrassing. That's ridiculous. Like, enough with the, like, trying to be, like, that fan. Like, enough. We cut it out. Like, no more. That was ridiculous. I thought it was disrespectful. Like, everybody knows, if you listen, what I think about how people react to Grisham based on how little playing time he gets. The We Want Soto chance, like, in the 6th, and then they start, like, after the first pitch, is ridiculous. Like, that's a joke. Cut it out. And I'm very happy that he hit a bomb to win the game. To shut them up. And then the same, like, bozos are like, oh, now we want Grisham. Like, you're a bozo. Like, I'm just going to say it. Ridiculous and embarrassing. I don't want to sound like a sports talk radio show host, but enough. Like, that was corny. That was whack. And I'm happy he hit that. And it was a bomb. Like, a bomb. Like, no doubt. Jason Hayward didn't move. He didn't even know where that ball landed. So, I'm not saying Trent Grisham is Jason Dominguez or Aaron Judge or whatever. He's a solid backup outfielder that y'all need to leave alone. Leave him alone. Like, I know it's stupid. Stop. Okay, now we can get to answering Jenny's question. What is it with Dominguez? Like, why is this always a topic?
Oh, number one, he's been hype since he was 16 years old. His nickname is the Martian. He's been compared to Mickey Mantle previously. And then he comes up last year. He plays 8 games. He hits a few home runs. He looks good. So, like, I get it. I understand, like, the public would be obsessed with a player who I just said all those things about. He's also 22 now. So he's still young. Like, he's younger than some guys still in college. Like, I went to Florida, our star player, Jack Caglione, who's going to be a top 10 pick in this year's, MLB draft.
And is a beast.
He's incredible. Dominguez is, I believe, 4 days older than Jack. And we're talking about him, you know, being a major leaguer. So, you know, there's been significant hype around Dominguez for quite some time. He is the team's top prospect. You know, if you look at the roster, you'd be like, oh, yeah, like, there's a spot for Dominguez to play or be on the roster at least. Like, he could take Grisham's spot. He could take Jermai Jones's spot. He could take Oswaldo's spot. So, like, certainly space for Dominguez to be on the roster. The one thing I would say is what Boone said yesterday. I'll read his quote. He says, when it's time, we'll be excited for that because we know what kind of impact he can have, but we're not going to rush that either. It will be when it's right. The time he's going to come up here, he's going to play. So that avenue is going to have to be there. There is no avenue for Dominguez to play right now. None.
Yeah.
As long as the guys are healthy, and there would be an avenue if Soto was going to be out longer. So I do think that, like, if Soto was going to miss a month, I think Dominguez would be the clear option to replace him. But because Soto's probably going to be back either tonight in Kansas City or tomorrow, or some point during this Kansas City series, he should be back. So there's no reason to have him up for a few days for no reason, essentially. That's pointless. So Boone is saying very directly, if he is on the major league roster, he is going to play. And there's just no spot for him to play right now, which is right. Totally fine.
And that's the way it should be. Like, all these suggestions of shoehorning him into a platoon with Stanton at DH and Verdugo and left, it doesn't make any sense. Like, if he's going to be here, you want Dominguez to play every single day. And if he did do that platoon and he was on the bench, then the same people that wanted that would also be mad that he's on the bench that day. Like, he's a very promising player that we all want to be a part of this team, playing every day. So when that opportunity arises, he'll be there, and then we'll see how good he is. And we all feel confident that he's going to excel. I'm a huge Dominguez fan, but I also feel like it needs to make sense, and he just needs to play. Like, the whole platoon and shoehorning him into positions just to have him there, like, doesn't do anybody any favors. Like, it just creates more drama that they don't need. Like, they're pretty drama free. We don't need to start manufacturing stuff just to say that Dominguez is there. So his time will come. He'll be impactful. We'll all celebrate it. It's going to be amazing, but it's just not the time now. And it's okay. They're 25 games above 500. They're doing pretty well. And the biggest issue, as we've said throughout this entire episode, is not in the outfield. So, yeah, he'll be here at some point, but, you know, it's okay to be patient, I think, when it comes to this. So yeah, thank you for your question. We got another Jason question, but I feel like that takes care of it. Okay, from Joshua Finchler. Do you think this year shows the Yankees being a bit less quote unquote stubborn, willing to admit missteps like Danis Santana, or scale back from the original plan by benching Rizzo? Feel like this frustrated fans in the past. Curious on your takes.
They'll never admit that there was a philosophy change publicly. But, like, you just look at some of the things that they've been doing this year. It's different than in the past couple of years. You know, consistent lineups. They haven't really done that much. You know, injuries have definitely played a part. But, you know, it's basically been, like, the same lineup or a version very similar to it when Soto was healthy and all those guys were in there. Like, haven't really changed that much. You know, yesterday Grisham is batting fifth, and it's because they want lineup diversity. Like, that wasn't – like, they talked about it being important, but, like, they weren't, like, actually doing it. Like, in years past, that Grisham wouldn't have been hitting fifth, no matter if he was lefty or righty, whatever. Like, he was in there. He was in the fifth spot yesterday because Boone said he wanted to break up righties. He wanted to make it less. He wanted the lane. You know, if the Dodgers brought in a right-handed reliever, and, you know, the number 4, 5, 6, 7 hitters are all righty. Like, he didn't want that to be an easy lane for a righty reliever to come in. There are other things that they've done that would suggest, like, they have, you know, made changes. I think the Santana one is certainly a good example of this, because, like, how many games did Albert Abreu pitch where it's like, you know, it's not working. We see it's not working. You know, he has minor league options. They don't want to burn the player. They don't want to DFA him and lose a player for no reason. They definitely do that a lot, like where it's not working, but they don't want to lose the player for nothing. They did it with Santana, and I don't know if that would have been the case in 23 or 22 or 21. Like it doesn't. How many believers are there where they just kept them and the player continued to not perform, but he's been on the roster for what felt like the entirety of the season? I do think some of the things have changed, but the Yankees probably won't admit it publicly.
Yeah, I think whatever audit they did over the winter, whatever that looked like for them, they definitely had these conversations. Like there's definitely a difference in how they approach things top to bottom. It feels like, so yeah, I agree. And it's good to see. I mean, I think it's smart and it was a good adjustment on their part, to do that. Okay. Arthur Blainville. Hi guys. Is there any chance to see Brian Cashman make a move for a second baseman? We talked about this before. We don't think so. Moving Glaber at first or at third, is it a viable solution? Thanks for the quality pod. Thank you for listening to the quality pod. Okay, so first, he's not moving to first base. I don't think he's moving to third either. I think he's the second baseman because you don't have a second baseman that, in my mind, you can reliably look to be a performer in October. We don't think they're making a move for a second baseman as of right now. I've been saying for over a year now, Glaber is a third baseman. It's so obvious to me that Glaber's a third baseman. He's not athletic enough, in my opinion, to play up the middle. And when I said this on Twitter about a year or two ago, for whatever reason, people were like going after me, and I'm like, and they kept referencing him playing shortstop and him not doing well there. And why would you keep moving him? And it's like, that's exactly why you should move him to third base. That's exactly what I'm talking about. He has good hands and he has a good arm and he doesn't need to think at third base. Just react, make the play, and let the rest of the infielders do what they do. He's not a second baseman to me. I think he makes some nice plays. I think he doesn't have the range to play middle infield. He just screams third baseman to me. And I don't think he's coming back to the Yankees either. I think this relationship will end at the end of this season. I did want him to come back at one point. He's played himself out of that. Offensively, deep, it's not going to happen. Also, like the Hal comments tell you, they're not spending that money on Glaber. Okay, fine. So we've moved on from that. But I just think he's a third baseman. I don't think they're going to move him to third base. I think they're going to keep him there. But he just screams third baseman to me if you were to keep him on the infield. And I don't think we're ever going to see that with the Yankees. Maybe we see it somewhere else. Maybe we see it down the line. But, yeah, I mean, I've thought he's a third baseman for a while now for a bunch of reasons. And ultimately, it's because I don't think he's athletic enough on that level to play the middle infield. And I know we talk about focus and concentration, and that's part of it. But also part of it is he's barely getting to some of these balls. And, like, I think he has good hands, but sometimes is just not in a position to make a play as well or as consistently as you want him to, because he just can't get to some of these balls. Like, he just can't get to them and be in a position to just make a routine play or to make the play easier for him. I think a lot of it is just his feet and his athleticism, and that's part of the problem. And even on some of the errors, it's just he's just getting to the baseball, you know, and like he's bent over going in the wrong direction. Then he always has to play it across his body. And part of that is like flair. And part of that is the timing of everything. He's getting to the ball, the baseball at that point. And now he doesn't have a choice but to throw across his body. And I think if you look at more athletic middle infielders, they're in position to make that play easier. So to me, he's not athletic at the major league level or at that elite athleticism to keep him there. But I don't think he's going to move. I don't think there's a position shift happening in his future anytime soon.
I don't have much to add. The only thing I'll say is, and this goes back to the Rizzo conversation. Like I've also seen people say, well, why don't they move Judge to first base, or why don't they move Spencer Jones to first base, or whoever? Like, position changes in the middle of the season for a player who's never played there outside of like catching balls at first base in Judge's case, it's so hard to do. Like, you know, this is the major leagues. You can't just move a player a position just because you think it's the best alignment if they've never played there before. Like, you have to have some sort of experience. And that's something that, like, they could do in the offseason, but they haven't done that. So, and we're talking about Glaber here. He hasn't taken any ground balls at third base. Right. So they're not moving him, or first base for that matter. Like, they're not moving a player who's never played there just because you think it's like the best alignment for the team or it makes sense. Like, they're not going to do that.
Yeah, it's not happening. I mean, he's their second baseman. I mean, like we said earlier, sink or swim with him at It is sink or swim with him at second base. You know, just got to see what happens. All right, Ryan Lee. Hey, guys. Pod has been fantastic. Big fan. Thank you, Ryan. Getting ready for the Yankees next series. If you were starting a team, how would you rank your big board of these position players if you were focused on a three-year period? And how would that change if you were doing a five-year or longer period? The options: Judge, Soto, Bobby Witt Jr. Thanks for the time and the fun discussions around the Yankees. You can go first.
If it was a three-year period, excuse me, my ranking would be Judge, Soto, and Witt. If it was a five-year period, probably Soto, Judge, and Witt. I still think Judge could be a really good player. You know, 5 years, we're talking, he's 32 right now. He could still be good at 36, 37. I don't know. History would say that people his size would fall off. I don't know. Like, training is much better now. Nutrition is much better. They have a good understanding of people's bodies and how they move and what's necessary for them to, you know, be a top performing athlete. So if you told me that Judge was still hitting 45 to 50 home runs when he was 36 or 37, like, I wouldn't be like that surprised, but just going off of historical precedence, it usually doesn't happen.
Okay. So, I'm just looking at someone's numbers real quick. Right, for a 3 year period, I'm going Judge, Witt, Soto. 5 year period, Witt, Soto, Judge. I think the shortstop position, he's the best shortstop in baseball to me. I think he's better than Gunner. I think Bobby Witt Jr. is an incredible baseball player.
Oh, he 100% is.
Yeah, and I think him being a shortstop tilts the scales for me. Offensively, he's not Aaron Judge. Nobody is, including Soto. So that's why my three-year period, I think Judge can maintain this level for the next 3 years. I think Bobby Witt is going to be if he's not already, I mean, you could probably make the case he is already now. He's a top five, top three player in the entire league. I think Bobby Witt is incredible. And if you haven't been able to see him play, if he does his thing, you're going to be in for a show. when the Yankees play the Royals. He's incredible. So I think if you're building a team, the elite top shortstop weighs a lot to me, and he's young as hell. You know, he's only going to get better, which is like crazy to say. He's going to figure out the nuances of the games, those little details that Judge has learned over the years to elevate his game. Obviously, we love Juan Soto. Juan Soto's incredible. He's going to do the same thing. He can't go wrong. But I think Bobby Witt being the best shortstop at his age, already accomplishing what he's accomplishing, is like really hard to top. I mean, he's – all right, of course I lost it. He's already at like a 4.2 F war, like, and it's June 10th. And I know that like shortstop like weighs into it, but he's a shortstop. You know what I mean? That's part of the equation. So for me, Judge, Witt, Soto, and then Witt, Soto, Judge would be my choices.
You can't go wrong with any of these picks, honestly.
Nah,
and no, I chose Soto for the 5-year period because – I mean, he is an incredible offensive player. Incredible. He's very gifted. And I would weigh that a little more than having a I understand the importance of having a shortstop, but I would also love to have a 170, 180 WRC plus hitter in the middle of my lineup. So that's why I would go with him. And I think that Soto could be that hitter for the next 5 years.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm saying he's going to be a 170, 180 shortstop.
That's the case, then you would want Witt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that's where he's headed in the next 5 years. I mean, I think you're going to get the shortstop position with like a 170, 180 WRC plus. That's where I think he's headed.
If he does that, then he's right up there with Otani and Judge the best player.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm a huge Bobby Witt Jr. fan. I think he's great. All right, last question from Brian Restuccia. I hope you guys are doing well. I have a question that is a little bit of the off the beat and path, but I figured it would be good to switch it up. Who do you guys think and want to be John Sterling's full-time replacement next season, and why? Thank you. Okay. I say Ricky Ricardo for a couple of reasons. One, selfishly, I think it would be nice to see a man or woman of color in that position. Those things are important to me, especially a Latino man who brings like a certain energy and presence and is bilingual in New York City. If they keep Juan Soto, I think all of those things matter. Beyond the cultural stuff, I think he's extremely entertaining. I think him having like a DJ background and having like a diverse radio background is like really important to me and special. I think he just brings like a different energy. And I think he brings the best out of Susan. And for as long as Susan's there, I think it's very important to make sure that Susan Waldman is as involved and naturally herself as possible. And I bring that up partly because that's what I think, but also I was listening to them this past weekend for a couple of innings, I think on Saturday, and they had this Ricky read a promo for something. I don't remember what it was, but at the end, it's for a car dealership in the Bronx. They're not supporting us, so I won't shout out the car dealership. And at the end of the read, it mentions the Boogie Down Bronx. Like, it says the Boogie Down Bronx at the end of the read. And for like 5 minutes as the game is going on, they're calling the game, but Susan and Ricky are having this back and forth about the phrase the Boogie Down Bronx. Like, Susan's like, why is it called the Boogie Down Bronx? And then Ricky's telling her about like hip hop in the Bronx. And she's like, yeah, I know that, But like, why that? Like, what does that phrase actually mean? Why was it boogie down Bronx? And like Ricky's explaining it, but he's like telling her the thing that she knew already. And he's like trying to figure out the best way to answer the question. And it was like so endearing and like natural. You know, it wasn't mansplaining. It wasn't any of those things. It was like an honest conversation talking about the history of this phrase that is very specific to New York. And like those are the things that I think are good for a New York Yankee broadcast. I feel the same for the Mets. Like, you know, it should reflect the local flavor of whatever city you're covering. And I think Ricky is able to do that with his history. I felt like John Sterling was able to do that with the Broadway stuff and the musicals. They had John and Susan had that connection of like older times in New York. And I feel, and it doesn't necessarily be like, it needs to be like old times in New York or like, you know, being so generational, but I just enjoy that banter. I enjoy his voice. I think he has a great voice. And the other thing for me too is, and this is not a, I don't want this to be a criticism or a knock on like Shackle or anybody else that's of the younger announcer generation. There is a very distinct voice and delivery that younger announcers have. I don't know if that's like taught in these like big time broadcast schools. I don't know if it's emphasized in, you know, these radio stations, TV networks. They don't want you to like sound different. I don't know what's behind it, so I don't want to act like I know what the reason is, but they all sound the same to me. And I like when someone doesn't sound like this new age broadcaster voice. I want flavor. I want something different. I want a distinct voice, distinct delivery, not the same cadence. I feel like a lot of announcers have the same cadence when they call a game. So that's why I like listening to Mike Farron during college baseball playoffs. I think Mike Farron has a very distinct voice and delivery, and it feels like we're watching the game at a restaurant or a bar. And he just happens to be covering the game. It feels like very human and like we're watching baseball. You know what I mean? So I would pick Ricky Ricardo. That was a long answer, but that's how I feel.
I'm going to recuse myself from this conversation. I have to see these people every day. So I'm not going to say one way or the other. The only thing I will say is I've loved Ricky's calls over the years. I don't listen to games on the radio anymore just because I'm at the game and I'm trying to, you know, pay attention to what's in front of me and listen to this crowd and whatever. So I don't listen to the radio anymore. I'll just say that I've been highly entertained by Ricky's calls over the years. And it also, your point about the relationship that Susan should have with her partner should factor heavily into that. You know, Susan and Ricky have a long-standing history with each other. They've known each other. They're similar in age. There's such an age difference with Susan and Justin. You know, it's hard to relate sometimes when the age gap is so large, and it is with Susan and Justin. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. So, that is all I will say about the radio broadcasts. I'm sure the Yankees will make the right choice with whoever they pick. It's a huge job. So, you know, they should feel like they can get anybody they want for the position. It's an iconic role. So, like, you know, there may be people out there who are broadcasting other teams, sports, who are looking at that role and we don't even know if they're interested. So it's a huge national role, and I'm sure they'll have a national search for that job when they end up deciding on who should be that candidate. It's probably going to be in the off season.
Yeah. Justin and Susan also do have a good banter. I remember a couple moments, where they've kind of gone back and forth and they've talked about like focaccia or something like that. And like, Justin's trying to explain it to Susan, and Susan's asking these like very like earnest questions about it, and Justin's trying to explain it to her, and yeah, they have good banter too. So I don't want to make it sound like it's just Ricky and Susan, but yeah, that would be my choice, and it might be somebody that we're not even thinking of, you know. So we'll see, but yeah, I agree. I think they'll make the right choice. I think it'll be good. There's only one John Sterling, you know, so you can't compare that person to John Sterling. I mean, he was one of one, and that was a great era, and looking forward to the next one. So thank you, everybody, for your questions. We're about to get out of here. Chris, any last words before we wrap this up?
Shout out to the Gators for beating Clemson in a 5-hour, 13-inning game
yesterday. Okay, let me ask you a question. When Cam Cannarella not only hits that home run, but makes that catch, are you like, oh, we're going home? The Gators are done?
I was watching the game in the press box. I think the game was just about to start, the Yankee game. And I like threw my head back. I was like, ah! I mean, it was an incredible catch. It was one of the best catches I've seen, considering like the moment. Like, he saved their season by twice. Making that catch.
He did it twice.
He hit the home run, and he made that catch, which was unbelievable. But yeah, it was a really fun game. Yeah. And then we had to have an ump show in extra innings. You know, can't have a baseball game. can't have a good baseball game without an ump show.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun to watch. The Gators had a really weird season. They probably shouldn't have been in the College World Series bracket to begin with. Like,
right.
They just didn't deserve it, but now they're in the College World Series.
Yeah, I think the name kind of helped them out a little bit.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. But they're there. I mean, it doesn't matter now. So how do you feel about their chances?
Again, it's been such a weird season. I don't expect them to win at all. The only thing I would say is, like, you know, they are hot at a good time. Like, they have talent. We mentioned Jack earlier. You know, he's an incredible hitter. He may be the best hitter in program history, which is saying a lot, because there have been some good players over the years. Pete Alonso probably up there too. But yeah, he's a special talent. I just don't know how to feel about this team. They've been weird all year. Wouldn't surprise me if they were eliminated in two games. Wouldn't surprise me if they won at all. Like, it's just one of those years.
Yeah, I'm looking at Florida State. They speaking of hot, I mean, they were bad last year, and now they're like incredible, and they got Tibbs the third. I don't know. It's going to be good. I think they have like a good field. It was good last year. The College World Series was good last year. On the softball side, Oklahoma, they're like the greatest collegiate team of all time. It feels like the women's Oklahoma softball team. They've won 4 national championships in a row, which is insane. So got to show them love too. But yeah, it'll be good. Congrats to the Gators. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love college baseball. College baseball and college softball are very fun to watch.
Yeah, they're really good. Entertaining. It feels like their season goes by the quickest, though. I think it does. I think it's the shortest season.
I think they play like 40-ish to 50-ish games a year.
It just feels like college football never ends, and college basketball like never ends. And then like baseball starts like that in mid-February, early March, and then all of a sudden it's like over, you know. It's weird. I'm sure that's not the case. It just feels that way. College football feels like it goes on forever, though. Like, but I'm not a big college football fan.
So. I was gonna say, I wish college football would go on forever.
Yeah, I
don't. Even though the Gators, my Gators are gonna stink this year. we play eight teams that are ranked. We have like the hardest schedule in college football history. Eesh. I'm gonna be pissed off every Saturday, starting in September, October. October, I'm going to be really angry, because it's just like the SEC schedule at that point. So we're going to just get our asses kicked every week, essentially. Not looking forward to that, but I'll be watching every game.
Yeah, but the Yankees will win the World Series, so you'll have fun in the playoffs. So it'll kind of balance itself out. And you can watch Ricky Pearsall with the 49ers.
That's right.
Who apparently is doing his thing out in Santa Clara, so that's good.
Good.
Yeah. So, all right. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. You can find us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Please subscribe. You can also subscribe and check us out on our YouTube channel of the same name. And thank you again for supporting us. And we will speak to you next week.